right.
Oh, sorry. Did I interrupt you?
No, go ahead. So I just introduced you and said that you'll be referring to the book, and you can provide page references as indicated. There'll be time for questions and member sharing after you finish. And take it away. You're on.
All right. Thank you, everyone. And once again, I am so sorry. But thank goodness for technology, and thank you, Regina, for reaching out. So a little bit about myself, and from what I understand, I'm just going to share a little bit about who I am, you know, my history with my eating disorder, and isms, and then we'll talk a little bit about my experience with the step. I've actually done a few steps. And we'll just go from there. And I'm open to anything. Please don't, you know, there's no question that I probably haven't gotten, but also I'm 100% open book.
Jen, I'm going to mute everyone, and so then you're going to have to unmute, okay?
Okay. Mute. Okay. All right. So just let me know if you can't hear me, Regina. I unmuted. All right. So like I said, I'm sorry. And I'm sorry, my background, I don't usually like to talk into a camera. So a little bit about myself. I grew up in actually New York, in a, you know, I was given everything that I had ever wanted or needed. But there's always something off about me, or just like, you know, how I felt about myself. I kind of joke, because I have two little kids right now, and I kind of watch them interact with people and what gets them uncomfortable. And I, you know, I can kind of sense, you know, similarities from how I grew up. And I try very hard, you know, how I phrase things. But just growing up, there's always something up. So something about growing up, there's something about, I just, in my own skin, I didn't feel comfortable. And I would try things like, you know, wearing certain clothes or joining certain clubs or doing certain things, just to make myself feel a little bit better about who I was. And I could never describe it until, you know, I did a lot more work on myself. And really, it was just something that was off. Like, I really couldn't put my finger on it. And I didn't really develop, I'd say, a textbook eating disorder until a little bit later when I was a teenager. But there was always something about my body that I was uncomfortable with. And I grew up, like I said, in New York. I grew up in a predominantly white town. And as you can see, you know, I was not white, but I always wanted to be blonde haired, blue eyed, and looked like everyone else. Like, it was something that bothered me. And I didn't really realize that I didn't look like everyone else until it was pointed out a few times. And I don't think that was, you know, I don't think it's really the purpose of the steps or anything to really pinpoint specifically what it was that caused anything. For me, it was just like I said, it was just that I felt like I didn't fit in. And while other people can kind of deal with that, I couldn't. And so at some point, you know, I got really uncomfortable in my own body, and whether it was puberty and stuff, like, my body just changed, and I was really uncomfortable with it. And at some point, you know, food itself was always something in my family that, you know, people in my family talked about. There were certain expectations of being, you know, certain size as an Asian female that my mom kind of, pushed on me. And, you know, I should mention, my mom definitely has a disordered view of food and eating. And, you know, that definitely, it did definitely trickle down to me and my sister. My sister never developed an eating disorder. I also am an alcoholic, and so I'm in recovery from both. And so for me, you know, the way that I dealt with certain things was I just developed isms, that I call them. So anyway, you know, I'd say I really picked up on my main form of an eating disorder, which really manifested in kind of yo-yoing between anorexia and bulimia. I must have been like 13 or maybe a little bit younger, but I would just, something about, I still remember like the day that I discovered it. It was just, you know, I was able to have a certain meal, and then everybody else, I went to another.
We're having some background noise. Is it coming from your house? It's not coming from Jen's house. All right, everybody who can mute, and Jen, please continue.
Thank you. And yeah, so basically it was just for me, you know, I developed these ways of kind of trying to cope and everything. The other thing I should say is like everything always had to be okay on the outside. And I always had this facade of like everything being okay, everything being, you know, fine, everything being good. I was very much a, you know, just a textbook person, like, you know, straight A's. I did well at school. I tried, you know, to be on clubs and stuff. And on the outside, I always tried to keep this facade up, but inside there was always just something off. And then so with me, with the eating disorder, it was kind of like this secret that I had, and it just worked for me. I honestly thought that that was going to be my normal, and I thought that I was going to live that way for the rest of my life. Like, I just thought, you know, when I discovered it, it was just this, and I at least in EDA, I usually try not to, like, mention specific foods, but it was just, like, this idea of, you know, being able to have your cake and eat it, too, like, because I would be okay in front of people. I would, you know, eat certain things, but I was so uncomfortable after I ate that I would end up binging and purging, or I would go all day restricting and feel really good about myself, but then I'd be starving at night and then I'd end up binging and purging. Like, it was just this crazy cycle. But in my head, all these other things that were going on were I was obsessing about calories. I was obsessing about my looks. I was obsessing about my weight. I would weigh myself every day. I would, you know, work out a certain amount to burn a certain amount. Like, so like in terms of the manifestations of my eating disorder, I really felt like I kind of did it all. Like, I just, you know, and I tried all doing it all, honestly, to make myself feel better. Like, it wasn't so much that, at the end of the day, I always, you know, when it comes down to it, like, no number was enough. Like, so no matter what, I would set these like goal numbers. And it wasn't like if I reached that number, I would feel good about myself. And, you know, the external validation never was enough either. People might say to me, like, you know, back then they would be like, oh, you look great. Or, oh, you look too skinny. Or, oh, you, like, no matter what it was, the comments, it always set me off into, you know, oh, my obsession. And it was just like this trigger of, you know, I need to lose more. I need to do more. I need to, you know, do X, Y, Z to make myself feel better. And it was all these things outside of myself, basically, and really doing any kind of work on myself that I, you know, I felt that I needed to do. And so, you know, without going too much war storing, like, this was my normal. This was, once again, I really did feel like this was how I was going to be for the rest of my life. And I honestly thought, like, a lot of people did live this way. I just thought, like, oh, this is my thing. Like, this is, you know, I knew that my mom dealt with it. And I was just like, I thought maybe, you know, just women in general dealt with it. And, you know, I'm learning more and more that people, I think, have versions of it. But it, to me, like, obviously mine was very pathologic. You know, like, it's not normal to eat and then immediately think like, oh, wow, I have to throw that up. Like, that's just not, you know, but for me, it was normal. And so for me, once again, like I said, I am in recovery from both alcohol and an eating disorder. And so when I was about it, I wouldn't say like 17 or 18, I really just discovered, wow, all these feelings and anxiety that I had surrounding my body, I could also kind of mask with drinking. And it kind of like took away some of my anxiety, and, you know, it allowed me to, you know, eat certain things or do certain things and not obsess as much. But then as soon as you took away the alcohol for me, you know, I went straight back to obsessing over my body and obsessing over the way I looked. But also it wasn't necessarily only just about, you know, what size of clothes I was wearing or whatever. It was just how I honestly felt about myself. You know, there were days that it was crippling. And when I think about how much it stopped me from doing, like, I would try on countless amounts of outfits and then realize, like, I'm not going out at all. I will not leave the house. And, or I would, you know, get, you know, I would purchase a certain amount of things and I'd say, like, none of this looks good. And then I would just, like, it would let me ruin the rest of my day. And, like, these were, while, like, you know, sometimes I tell my friends, like, some of these stories that don't have the isms, like, they're like, oh, I, you know, like, I do that too. But, like, for me, it was crippling. Like, I wouldn't be able to continue on with, you know, the activity, or it would ruin my day completely, or potentially even, you know, weeks at a time. And obviously for me, like, I had a lot of other issues that I had to deal with. But once again, it was to the point where it just made me miserable. And so I definitely yo-yoed between, like I said, picking up the alcohol versus trying to, you know, over-exercise or turn to food. And just all of it was just to mask who I was. And so when I finally, you know, I hit, I'd say my bottom, both with alcohol and my eating disorder, I ended up in a treatment center for alcohol. And they took away my alcohol. So obviously my eating disorder went full blown. They wouldn't let me work out. They monitored, they had somebody like following me because they knew that I'd probably go to the bathroom. And it just like, that's when I realized, you know, I had a problem, but I also wasn't quite ready, nor did I know how to take care of it. Cause the other thing was like, I put all these resolutions and I always said like, you know, this is the year that I stop, or this is the meal I'll stop, or once I get to this weight, I'll stop. And it never, there was never the time to, because as the big book says, like, you know, we on our own cannot, like it's, you know, in AA, we talk a lot about, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's not about your own willpower. It's not about, you know, human strength. You have to rely on a higher power. And I had no concept of that. And I had no sense of what it meant. Like everything else in my life, you know, I always say, to a certain extent, everything else in my life, I've been pretty decent at in terms of like, I hate to use like control or whatever, but you know, I relatively, if I put my mind to something, I can generally do it. Except when it came to my eating disorder or my drinking, like I could not, you know, no matter how hard I tried to, or how hard I thought my way through things, it didn't work for this. Like it genuinely, this was one thing that I couldn't do on my own. And it was very hard to come to that realization. And so for me, the first treatment center was not where I got sober from my eating disorder, nor was it where I got sober from my alcohol. It took me another 2 years of just crazy in and out of AA. At that time, I had no idea what EDA was. But it's just, at that point, I was just, you know, yo-yoing between when I was abstinent from drinking, I was binging and purging and spending all my money on food and, you know, exercising and all this stuff. And it just, I was spiraling out of control. And I think some of my loved ones started to see. I was very fortunate that, you know, after that 2 year in and out, I ended up in a treatment center for my alcohol. They did do dual diagnosis. And they, one of the first things my therapist said was that you need to go find a sponsor that does EDA and AA. And I'm in Delray, which I think Regina may have mentioned. And so we're very lucky because we do have a pretty active chapter of EDA. And so I still remember I was in the counselor's office one night getting I think like vitamins or something. I was just in there and he was like, you need to find this woman, Nuria. And I honestly, I had no idea what he meant by that. Just because it's also a unique name. And I was just like, I don't understand what you mean. I have to find Nuria like that, you know? So I was just like, all right. And he was like, if you really care about getting sober, like that's what you'll do. And so I remember I was forced to go to EDA meetings. And when I was there, it was the first time that I actually heard people who shared a lot of my mental thoughts. You know, in AA, and I'm not sure if any of you are in other 12-step any other 12-step fellowships, you know, I heard things that resonated with me and made me realize like, oh, wow, they kind of think like me, except when it came to the eating, because you can take away the drugs and the alcohol and that's somewhat simple. But at the end of the day, you always have to eat. And so that was really complicated to me, even though it seems like a relatively simple concept. And I remember people being like, you just need a healthy relationship with food. Like, what do you mean you don't know, you know, how to balance that? Or like, we would get a certain amount of money for groceries. And I remember obsessing, not because of the money, but obsessing because I knew I had to, you know, I only had so much binge food. And I also only had so much, you know, healthy food if I was going to restrict. And it was just this craziness for me, on top of the fact that I was trying to get sober. So anyway, when I finally got into the EDA room, And I'm hoping that the online method also has this for many of you, is that I started to feel that I wasn't alone. And that was really something that was really hard for me, because, you know, for a really long time, it was funny because when I got sober, or I tried to get sober in AA, I had no problem admitting that I was an alcoholic. Like, it was very clear that I was an alcoholic. I had a really hard time saying like, hi, I'm Jen. I'm a bulimic. Hi, I'm Jen. I have an eating disorder. Like, something about that for me was even harder. So I remember my therapist actually made me say that first before I was really ready to say like, hi, I'm Jen. I'm an alcoholic. It was like, hi, I'm Jen. I'm bulimic. Hi, I'm Jen. I have an eating disorder. And that was like, it didn't roll off the tongue the way, you know, cause everybody else, it was so okay with saying like, hi, I'm Jen. I'm an addict, alcoholic. Anyway, but what EDA did provide for me was I did see these people who actually seemed like they potentially had a solution. And, you know, I saw that in AA for the drinking, and I understood to a certain extent that people could live without, you know, drinking and drugs. It still boggled my mind in certain aspects. But with eating, I really didn't understand, because I was like, how am I going to take away my obsession of calorie counting? How am I going, even if I don't binge and purge, which is my manifestation, how am I going to not obsess about the way I look? Or how am I going to obsess with, you know, what I weigh? And how am I going to not obsess about the way, like, people are looking at me? Like, all those things for me, I was like, I was ready to live with that for the rest of my life. You know, if I got sober from the other things, I didn't think this, like, that part was possible. And what was, you know, a gift of my higher power was I was put in a room full of men and women, all at different stages of their sobriety in many different fellowships, and also in EDA. And they had found a solution. And, you know, I heard some of these women talk about their solution. I heard some of these men talk about their solution. And I was still very skeptical. Don't, you know, I was very much like, oh, that worked for you. It's not going to work for me. But I did end up finding this person, Nuria, that this counselor had told me about. And she, you know, she was willing and okay with working me through both the AA steps and the EDA steps. And this was almost 8 years ago. Or 7 years ago in July of this past year. And, you know, when I first started the steps, I tried my best to have an open mind, but I was still very much binging and purging and still acting out in my eating disorder. And I think one of the things with, like I said before, like with AA and with NA and some other fellowships, is that it wasn't quite as black and white with EDA. And so the one thing that I always tell my sponsees, especially when they're starting out, is to be gentle with yourself. You know, it doesn't come as soon as you admit that you are powerless over your eating disorder. It doesn't necessarily just click. And, you know, I say that because with drinking and with drugs, it's somewhat, I don't want to say easier, because it's definitely not easy, but it's just, you either pick up or you don't. And it's very clear cut. For an eating disorder, it's somewhat like, you know, did I obsess today or did I not? Did I overeat today? Did I eat, you know, did I restrict today? Or was I just being mindful about my eating? So it was a little bit grayer. And I was beating myself up a lot, because I was just like, am I doing this program right? Am I lying to myself? Am I lying to my sponsor? You know, am I lying when I'm sharing things? And what my sponsor and a lot of people in EDA just kept reiterating was that there's kind of layers. And, you know, like I said, we hate using other foods, as the analogy, but like we would always say, like, it's kind of like the layers of an onion, because when you peel back the first part and you stop the acting out, or you peel back the first part and you stop, you know, the over-exercising or the stepping on the scale, there's always different milestones. And one of the things, at least, and I'm sorry, I'm so sorry again that I missed the beginning, but one of the things we would do in our EDA meetings is that we would share milestones in the beginning. And I remember it was such a, at first it seemed like so trivial that I would raise my hand and say, like, I ate all three meals today and I didn't act out. Or even, you know, I ate this and I didn't obsess about it. Or I put on a pair of jeans and I didn't care. Or I threw away or donated all of my, you know, will fit into clothes. Like little things like that, which other people don't understand as huge milestones for somebody in EDA or somebody in recovery from an eating disorder, like those things made a big difference in my early recovery. And being able to say, like, while I may have acted out today, I didn't step on the scale today, like little things. And so for me, I had to be gentle with myself. And, you know, my sponsor kind of reiterated. Having said that, there was also the, you know, being honest with myself. So it was like, I can't over-rationalize everything that my behavior. So you have to, at the end of the day, be truthful of, you know, what were my intentions when I did this? Like, what are my intentions when I'm telling on myself to my sponsor? Am I telling her half truths? Am I telling her what I wanted her to know? You know, and I used to do that a lot with therapists. Like, I would tell them parts of what's happening in my life. And I used to tell that to people too, because I would tell people, oh, I'm doing great. Or I'm, you know, everything's wonderful, but I would leave out, you know, parts of what was really going on in my life. You know, the reason I also was really excited about talking about the fourth step is because the fourth step is really for me when I started to notice some of those psychic changes and some of, and noticing my higher power working kind of I shouldn't say in my favor, but just started to notice my higher power working a little bit more in my life. So when I started the first step, like I said, I was doing my AA and EDA steps. And at the time, the EDA big book wasn't really written. They had an earlier version of it. And so what we would do is the first time I went through the steps, we just every time it said like an alcoholic or alcoholism, we would substitute it. So I, you know, that you're powerless over your alcohol and my eating disorder or and my bulimia. And that's just how I worked it through. And I continue to work with many of my sponsees that way. And it was just, it was amazing because a lot of the stories, even like Bill's story, does relate back to really any kind of ism. Like you could substitute any kind of a pathological obsession over something, and it really does apply. And one of the things that you probably already have spoken about is that really after, and I don't have the page number right in front of me, but really after, I think it's like the first 100 pages, they don't really talk about alcoholism. They really just talk about like the mind and the physical allergy. But you can talk about a physical allergy and the obsession over any substance or any kind of thing that you do to get outside of yourself. So when I first came into the program, I should say that I had a very skeptical view of it. And one of the biggest skeptical parts for me was that I was very anti-religion. And I thought, oh, any step that had God in it wasn't going to apply for me. Not that I had anything against a God. I didn't have a God in my life. So, you know, growing up, I mentioned I grew up in a very predominantly white Jewish neighborhood. I went to more bar mitzvahs than anything. And I had no relationship. I celebrated Christmas for the tradition more of anything. And then at some point in high school, my parents told me that we were all Buddhists. And I was just like, okay. So I didn't really have religion. And so I was very skeptical because I was like, all right, well, if I don't have a God, I don't know how this is going to work for me. And obviously, you know, this is a spiritual program, not a religious program. And so I did have to create the idea of a higher power and identity of a higher power for myself. But when it came down to the first three steps, you know, you're doing more admitting and you're talking about how your life has become unmanageable because of your eating disorder. And I could see that. I could see, you know, how my life had become, you know, I spend a ridiculous amount of money on things. I obsessed in an obscene amount of time during my day about things. And like I said, you know, I was hoarding clothes that didn't fit, and I obsessed over certain clothes and the way I looked. So I knew how my life had become unmanageable. The part for me about the fourth step that was really difficult was because as it related to alcohol, I saw where I was resentful and who I had hurt, and you know, my part. And so like between the fourth and the amends, I kind of like understood for alcohol how that worked. With an eating disorder, I thought I was holding it a secret. So I didn't really know who really knew about it. And I also didn't know, you know, in terms of like resentfulness, like I really didn't know how it was going to play out, basically. And so one of the things that my sponsor always said, you know, was just have an open mind about it and just have faith that it worked for me and it couldn't work for you as well. And so that's what I just try to say, you know, whatever your opinion of it is, you might have tried steps in the past with other things. You may have tried the steps for your eating disorder already. But just have at least the only thing, if the only thing is that you can have is that you can see that it worked for someone else and have a little bit of faith that maybe it could work for you. You know, I had to hold on to that little tiny bit of faith for a really long time. Sorry. So like I said, for the first three steps, you know, I would go a certain period of time and then something would happen in my life and I would, you know, I would act out over it. So I was like, I could see little improvements, but then I would still act out. And so I just thought that would be my normal. You know, I would go periods of time and then, you know, which would be positive for me because in the past I was acting out every single day, multiple hours per day. So I was like, okay, baby steps. That's okay for me. At some point when I started to write down some of my resentments, one of the things that my sponsor had me do, and we can go into the book as well. One of the things that my sponsor had me do was not only write down the resentments that I had for others, but she also had me write down the resentments I had for myself because I didn't realize how many resentments I had against myself too. And one of the things about the fourth step is that it really takes not only just the resentment parts, but then it looks at your role in things and it looks at what, you know, how you're impacted by it and you know, why, why you basically are resentful. And at the end of the day, a lot of it comes down to selfishness, self-seeking. And you know, that kind of bothered me at first because I was just like, well, how is it really selfish if I'm doing this to myself? And how is this behavior really going to change? Because it, you know, if it's resentful against myself, how is it, I could understand as it related, like I said, to other people as with alcohol, but for the eating disorder, I just felt like it was all completely on me. But then I started to write about things like, okay, I was resentful at certain people. And then I started to look at my role in things and how I set the ball rolling for a lot of things. And then I started to realize certain actions that I had taken and certain things that I had done. And, you know, I didn't realize that it had as much of an impact on other people. And so those were some of the conversations that started to come out as I was filling out my fourth step. Because I remember sitting on my fourth step, and I'm not sure if any of you are going through your fourth step now. But I've had, you know, sponsees go into their fourth step, and you know, my sponsor always said it to me, and we say it to my sponsees as well. It's just the fourth step is really hard, even though it's somewhat a simple, you know, because it's by column, it's very much like a worksheet as opposed to some of the other steps where you're kind of reflecting on your past. But with the fourth step, it is relatively straightforward. But it's amazing how, at least with my sponsees, how often we sit in it. And we procrastinate to a certain extent. We sit in it, and then it becomes somewhat of a miserable experience. And it doesn't have to be that way. And the quicker you get through the fourth step, and the quicker you get to that fifth step, when you can reveal to somebody else who has had an eating disorder as well, some of what you've been holding on to about the shame, the binging and purging, like I said, like for me, I would find like garbage bags and I would, you know, I would puke in the garbage bags. And I was just like, nobody else in their mind could possibly have done that too. And then my sponsor would be like, I've done it. You know, the amount of times that I've like clogged toilets and, or stolen food. And so like things like that, where I was just like,
hey, Jen.
Yep.
Hi, I'm sorry. This is Paul.
Yep.
I just want to draw your attention to the time. We have about 12 or 13 minutes left in the meeting, and I think to let other people have a chance to share. Can you maybe bring it to a close in the next 3 minutes or so?
Yes, I can. I'm so sorry.
Awesome. Thank you. Go ahead.
And so I would say basically, you know, and I'm sorry that I focused so much on leading up to it. You know, it took me a while to get to that fourth step, and it took me a while to realize that things were happening in my life and changes were happening that I definitely didn't have any control over, and I definitely had no real role in doing. Things like going a few days without obsessing, going a few days without obsessing over how I looked or what I was eating and putting in my body. And then slowly putting, like I said, those layers of that onion, peeling back certain things and watching miracles. And I say miracles because it really was a miracle. Oh, sorry, is there a question?
There's some noise on the line, Jen. I'm going to mute everyone, so you'll have to unmute.
All right, and like I said, it was the miracles, because it was a miracle for me to be able to go through a day without binging and purging, and then a week without binging and purging, and then realize that I wasn't obsessing and calorie counting, and that I hadn't stepped on a scale, and then getting to certain milestones, because it wasn't so much about the time, it was more about the mindset and the fact that I was able to get through a day without thinking about certain things. And so that's when I started to realize like the steps were really working, and that this program had essentially laid out the steps for me to be able to actually go through a day without obsessing over something like, you know, my weight or what I was eating. And once again, like holding other people's hands through this process as well. I've made some of my best friends in this program, and realizing that we've all gone through this road and really recovered from this seemingly hopeless state of mind, and being able to continue to assess, you know, where I'm at today. It's amazing, because one of the things that I really didn't think I'd be able to do is, you know, get through a wedding without obsessing and binging and purging and, you know, dress fittings and all that stuff. Then going through a pregnancy, going through two pregnancies, I never thought I'd be able to watch my weight gain and my body change and, you know, not obsess over that and not obsess over the number on the scale. And just my whole relationship with food and not having a good food, bad food, you know, categorizing things, being able to actually enjoy, you know, eating and being present with people. And I think that's really just what the miracles of the program. With that, I am so sorry that I went so long, and please, I will, at the end of this meeting, I will be happy to give you my phone number and my contact information. So if anybody wants to reach out, I'm more than willing to have, you know, more one-on-one conversations with you. So with that, I open any questions.
Thank you so much, Jen. We're going to just take care of a little bit of this. Yay. Regina, please stop the recording. And thank you so much for your sharing your story.